Have you ever seen someone living an amazing life and thought to yourself, how'd they get so lucky? If you are not currently living a life that's on your terms, a life by your design, then this podcast series is for you. This is the More Confidence with Luna Guy podcast. And in this special season, I'm going to be interviewing people who are living a life by design, living a life on their terms. And I'm going to find out once and for all if it is just luck or there's something more going on. Let's dive in.
Oh, Beck Thompson, how do you get so lucky? How did you get so lucky? This is a conversation I'm really passionate about having because I think that there is a huge myth that says that people who are living a life by design, people who are living a great, wonderful life, have somehow gotten lucky. And this is why I want you on the show. This is why I want us to have this conversation. I'm going to talk about what you do a little bit later and all that kind of jazz. Because you're a very dear friend of mine, and you're someone who I believe is living a life on their terms, insofar as much as we're, as we can, right? The opening question that I want to ask you straight off the bat here, my dear friend and guest here on this special season of the More Confidence with Luna Guy podcast, is what has been your most favorite mistake or failure in your life that was bad at the time that turned out to be great?
Oh, good question. That is a good question. I'm glad you didn't give it to me prior.
Yeah, I didn't. I did. I haven't given any kind of like any insight as to what my questions are going to be. I just want it candid.
Yeah, my favorite mistake was probably doing my degree at uni.
Tell me about that. What made that a wonderful mistake for you?
Because I've up until very recently, I've been in denial that it had anything to do with where I'm at now, but I feel like I understand the link of why it's important that I did that to be where I am now. But it felt useless at the time. Like I didn't feel like, for those who don't know, I studied social work, but it felt like a useless degree. I learned a lot of theory. I didn't feel like it had anything to do with practice. And it felt like a waste of money and time, although I met a lot of beautiful people.
What made it not be a mistake? And you said
That,
only recently as well. Like, how recently did you think?
yeah, like the end of last year, I was literally talking to someone about this morning in that I worked in, after I left uni, I worked in a lot in domestic and family violence. And when I left that field, I didn't realize literally until last year, and I left about 3 or 4 years ago, that I was so burnt out when I left. So that's the reason I kind of shut it out of my life. But I left this area of work and the area of social work. I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want it in my bio. I didn't want it linked with coaching at all. And I only see now that where I was working before was in the phase of like repair and a reactive space of working like you've been impacted by violence and let's react to that. And now I'm working at the other end of the spectrum where I'm helping women with their self-worth so that they don't get into those situations. But I never made the link between what I was doing. It was like it was a whole other part of my life. And yeah, so if you'd asked me this question last year, I wouldn't have had any idea that they're linked, and what I did then is very much linked to what I do now, just from a different end.
Yeah, wow. So like before you were putting out fires, almost it kind of
Yeah.
seems like, or you were attending to the trauma, right? You were attending to the kind of end result of what happens when we have put up with a lot in our life and people have made victims of us. And now you work with them. And so for those of you who don't know, Beck is a she's your dating and relationship coach. She's a podcast host and author of an international best-selling book, In the Heart Behind and the Heart Behind the Relationship Circle. So she helps women. You tell me, you help women to find love, is that right?
Yeah, totally. And I suppose along that way, there's a lot of work on self-worth and boundaries and putting up with, or not putting up with behavior that we don't deserve.
And so that's what you teach now. Being that you said that it is your favorite mistake, like that actually turned out quite good for how long? How long has it been since you did the social degree to now?
That's a really good question. I think I
Ish, like, is it
finished.
10 years? Is it 4 years? Is it
Yeah, it's
15?
longer than maybe 15. Yeah.
Yeah. So for maybe 15 years, well, let's call it 10 because you were working in the field, or
Yeah.
even 5, you've felt like that was not a waste of time, but maybe something that was just an old version of you that held no relevance to now.
Yeah.
And now you've realized how they're connected.
Yeah, completely.
What have you noticed? What are you now that you've had that insight, what are you drawing from the social work to bring into the work that you're now doing, kind of, as you say, at the front end of people learning how to believe in themselves, have self-worth, have that level of boundaries, I'm not putting up with crap. Where it's like, what are you pulling through, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if anything that I teach is dramatically different. I think it's more that I held it as like a shadow aspect of myself, like I denied it, and now I'm like, no, this is relevant and actually really powerful that I did this, and it enables me to have sometimes what I see in the coaching field that people don't have is boundaries with clients and confidentiality and respect and privacy. And so I'm very grateful that that was drummed into me in social work. Like, it is, there is no way you would speak about anyone you're working with than anyone else. Like, you wouldn't give names or details, or, you know, and that doesn't often happen. Sometimes it's skipped in the coaching field. So I'm very grateful that I actually had that.
It's skipped in the counseling and social work
field. Yeah. Too, yeah, totally. Totally. So I think it's just that I worked in government that it's like. Yeah.
Well, I'm also hearing that it taught you a sense of moral, a framework of integrity, of morals.
Mm.
This is such an important question, and it's so interesting about what your favorite mistake is, because as we're coming into this podcast series of How'd You Get So Lucky, we're unpacking the myth of that idea that when you live a life on your terms, that somehow that happens because of luck. You know, you hear stories of people, they just fell into it, or people were an overnight success. And I think it's important for us to have a look and unpack what has led us to where we are today. And I think that, like you said, there's a shadow element, right? Like, oh, well, that's just something that I did in my past. And there's almost like there's no transferable skills or knowledge. And when we deny that, I think that we lose a bunch of the wisdom that comes from that. What's your thoughts on that?
I completely agree. I also did the same thing with network marketing. I did 2 years in network marketing, and I almost, again, I think I felt ashamed of the sector. So I removed myself from that and didn't want to, you won't read that anywhere in my bio or anything. Mm. Not that it's relevant particularly to what I do now. However, it definitely taught me a lot about running events and nurturing clients. And yeah, it definitely plays a part in the way that I run my business now. So completely agree.
When you were in network marketing, well, actually probably more specifically when you left, or like what happened? How did you stop being in network marketing?
Oh, great. I don't even know if I remember. I think it just faded out. I think for ages I said I was in it and I really wasn't in it. And to be honest, it just wasn't in alignment with me. It was when I had to make the decision around, am I going to do the relationship circle and that and social work, or am I just going to solely focus on the relationship circle? And I was like, I felt spread too thin. So I was like, I have to choose what I feel most in alignment with. And that was this.
Yeah, yeah, because you've got over a decade of experience in coaching and therapy, really. Mm. Like, you're there to dive deep into the wonderful world of relationships. As you say, you know, you're compassionate, you have a no-nonsense approach, and you help individuals and couples to uncover their quirks and spark and have sparks in their connections. I'm so curious with the network marketing stuff. Did you feel like when you left that to really pursue the relationship circle that there was a sense of failure? Was there any kind of, oh, I stuffed up, or I – actually, better question for you. Was there a perception of failure because you probably put yourself out there with network marketing? Mm. Did you think that there was any kind of feedback or judgment or perception that you had failed or followed through?
I don't know if I thought about it. I just don't care what people think, so I don't know that I took that much notice, to be fair. I did think that I'd burnt bridges, because there's not a very great way in network marketing that you just reach out to every single friend that you possibly have to try and, and I definitely did that. So I was like, I've definitely burnt some bridges there with people, and they're not going to want to know about my new business, because I think the thought when I began was they're just going to think that's another phase. You know, she's doing something else new.
Yeah, and I'm really curious about that piece because, again, living a life that's on your terms, right, requires us to have courage to try new things, right, which also means that we have to have the courage to fail at things and to maybe be perceived by the world as this is just another phase that she's going into. I'm sensing that you didn't really take that in consciously into the relationship circle, but how do you think that that being almost a little bit burnt or burning those bridges, how do you think that impacted your willingness to go into the next venture?
Yeah, I can tell you how I maybe was conscious, or maybe I am now conscious of how I was, because it was exactly the same as social work. So when you're in social work, all over social media, it is good if you do not put your name out there anywhere. So you're almost invisible. And being in business is the opposite, right? So it took me a while. Like my word for the year, several years in a row, was visible, become visible, visible, visible. And it was the same with that. I think I was like, I'm doing it, but I'll do it quietly. Like, you know, I won't necessarily scream to the world that it's what I'm doing. So because there was a sense that it is another thing and people are going to think it's just another thing. And maybe I thought that too. Maybe I thought, well, this is just another new thing that I'm trying. It did feel different, but I wasn't going to know at that point that this is where I would be down the track. So, I think it meant that I was more hidden.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So then there's a sense of like once bitten, twice shy vibe of hold myself back a little bit more, be a little bit more reserved, harder to kind of maybe get the momentum. I know that there's people who are going to be listening and watching this podcast who want to step out in their own and maybe they want to be more visible. You know, they're in a place where maybe it is even network marketing for them, or is it their own business? Maybe they want to be a gardener. I don't know what it is, but there will be people that want to be pursuing a life on their terms and something that they're passionate about. What would you say at this point in your career? And I'm gonna talk about where you're at and what your life looks like right now, because I know it's not without its challenges. Definitely not without its challenges. What would you say to someone who's in that spot where they've been, you know, once bitten, twice shy? They've maybe had a few failures under their belt of, and now people are thinking that maybe they're a flake or they've burnt some bridges. How would you help them to have the courage to go again, I suppose?
Yeah, it's not about you. Like, I think that when we make it about us, if I made it about me and what are people going to think about me and are they going to judge me, and I wouldn't have done anything. Like, you know, it's not about me. It's about the people that I can support and the lives that I can change. And even if that is one person in my whole career, amazing. You know, even if that's one person I stopped from getting into a violent relationship, or, you know, having self-worth and loving themselves or whatever it is, amazing, you know. So I think make it about the work that you're doing, because you'll have an impact on people's lives, whatever it is.
How do you think that, you know, I love this, it's not about you. It's something that I learned in my coach training that was drilled into us, was get over yourself, it's not about you. And I love it, and it's been something that when I come in to serve, when I'm in my coaching calls, when I'm speaking, when I'm writing, when I'm in my courses, whatever I'm doing, even here on the podcast, it's not about me. How do you marry that with having enough self-worth? Because self-worth is kind of like is about me, right? Like it's saying that I am good enough and I can have the belief in myself. Where do you think the nuance is between the it's not about you, but also believing in yourself enough to go do that?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this properly, but in my head, it's not that it's so what you're doing is not about you, but you are the driver to make that happen. So you have to believe in yourself enough to show up and support whoever you're supporting and still support them where they're at, but I don't know if that makes sense. Like, you've still got to have enough self-worth to know that you can support that person, but it's not about you supporting, it's not about you. It's still about you supporting that person.
Yeah. I think, was it you and I who was having a conversation recently? Yeah, it was. It was with you and I were chatting about this recently, that the irony of low self-esteem is that when we're in low self-worth and low self-esteem, we actually make the whole world about us.
Yeah.
we are actually putting ourselves in a higher level of importance, interestingly enough, because we're worried that everybody's thinking all these bad things about us.
Mm.
But when people are just getting on with their own life.
Mm.
So what I'm hearing you say there is that it's like, well, it's about believing in your value and what you have to give to the world in the work that you're doing, whatever that is, artistry or gardening or pottery, whatever it is for you, coaching in this example, and getting yourself out of the way that instead of thinking about, oh, well, what should I say next? Or do they like me? Or am I doing it right? When we make it about the other person, from a work perspective, our worlds change.
Absolutely.
Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, good summary. This is what she's good at, people, good at summarizing. When I make a sentence 5,000 words long, she makes it very succinct.
I feel like that was as many words. I feel like there was as many words as that. Being that my first book was 120,000 words, my second book is 60, and I'm still getting a big book fee of like it's still a too much of a big book. I love it. Too funny. We've kind of, you know, tell me about your life right now. How do you think that you're living life on your terms or a life on your design? Tell me about literally the kind of things that you're doing now. What does a life in the day of or a week of Beck Thompson look like?
Yeah, what's cool is that I literally just came back from a walk and I went up this cliff that I'd never been up before and I was like, holy cow, you can see the top of my beach, and like, oh, it overlooked the whole of my beach. And I was like, I live here. Like, this is amazing. Like, I literally walked across the road up a hill and I can see the whole beach. And so that's a huge part, is that we live opposite a beach, and I feel very grateful for that. And something that we, when I say we, me and my husband, had on our plan for our 5-year plan for about 15 years and actually made happen. So it's that I work from home completely, it's that I do what I love completely, that I've now got a little boy who is in kindy, so he's not with me all the time. That I get to plan my day. I have the freedom to plan my day with who I want and what I want, and the freedom to change that at any point and pivot in a different direction if I want.
Yeah. Yeah. You said something really interesting. It was on your 5-year plan for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I think that this is so important here because there is this idea of like, oh, if it hasn't happened yet, it's not going to happen.
Mm.
How did you keep the vision alive of the dream that you happen to be living now for the years that it wasn't happening?
We definitely did. I'm not sure if I consciously know how we did it. We visited down here a lot. It was very much.
From where?
We're from Sydney, and then we came down the south coast of New South Wales.
So for context, there, biggest city in Australia. Yeah. 5 odd million people. How many people live in the town?
No
that
idea.
We live in. I think it's about 20,000 tops.
It's a lot. Yeah. Okay. It still feels like a lot. There's definitely a lot here at the moment. When I filmed the video of the beach, I was like, there's lots of people down there. It doesn't normally look like that, everyone.
It's not, because we have a lot of tourists in our town this time of year.
So I don't know if we did it consciously, but we definitely visited down here. And to be honest, it was really just a dream that I don't know if I knew it was going to be reality. I don't know if I fully believed that. I really wanted it to happen. My husband really wanted it to happen. But then we just did it and it was a reality.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What did it take? You know, I met you maybe two years ago-ish, around about that kind of vibe when you first moved into the area. And similarly, you and I have similar stories of, you know, I lived in Melbourne, big city, you know, 4 or 5 million people, and then moved to a sleepy coastal town to make my dreams come true kind of vibe.
Mm.
How did you make that happen? Like, what did you have to do? Let's start with practically. Practically, what did you have to do a couple of years back to be able to make your life here work?
I would say that we just jumped, because that's literally what we did. Well, we decided. I think that was the biggest step, is that we decided that we were going to move. And then I am kind of lucky, because the universe just actually aligned. My husband got a job. We got a rental really easily. We moved in the middle of lockdown of COVID, so there was nobody on the road. It was the hardest thing was packing up our house and not having anyone come and help us pack it up, because it was lockdown, and not being able to say goodbye to people. But it just worked, because, and I do believe because we decided and we committed and we were ready.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that, of like, maybe I'm a bit lucky, right? Because this is this curious piece of what happens when we say yes to our dreams, how things can fall into place.
Yep.
I'm not saying they always do, but how they can fall into place. What was the, talk me through the mindset. How long had you been going, we're thinking about making this move, like, legitimately? Was it a quick decision? Was it a long decision? Was it a hard decision? Talk to me through the mindset of it.
Yeah, we had been, so probably literally about 10 years, we'd been saying, let's move down south. That's probably when we started the discussion around, let's make that happen. In the midst of that, we did a lot of personal development together. We did IVF and had our bubba, who's now four. And so we moved down when he was two. And so when it was lockdown and I was randomly just Googling jobs, I think I just went on Seek to look for a job for my husband.
Were you working? So, were you both already still
working? I wasn't. I was on mat leave from my job. I actually think I'd just been made redundant maybe. So I actually didn't have any. So I was deciding that I was going to start my business. So I wasn't working for anybody. He was. He was working in Sydney, and it was not nice to work in that time because that's when he had to get 1,000 rat tests a day just to go to work. And yeah, it just wasn't a nice environment to work. There was a lot of fear. Sydney wasn't a great place to be anyway. Yeah. And so I just remember Googling one day and I was like, I found a job for you. and he's looked over the years for jobs as well. And nothing, he's a landscaper, and it's not, wasn't that easy for a job to just come up. And I was like, I think I found a job for you. I was like, I'm just going to look for rentals. And I was like, I think I found a rental. I'm just going to see if we can do a video call. And I was like, okay, I think we're moving. We just made it happen. You know, it was a discussion. I didn't just decide for both of us, but yeah, it happened pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly after 10 years.
Yes.
And that's this nuance here that I want to get to, because yes, there were jobs, right? But you had looked before.
Yes.
You had looked before for jobs.
Right? And houses.
And houses. So it had been something that has been in the making for 10 years.
Yep.
How did, you know, was it the fact that you had the job and the potential house that made you go finally? Or was there a step before that, that kind of like, I don't want to be here anymore, like I've had enough?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. Again, I don't know if that was conscious, but yeah, definitely.
That point of I've had enough.
Yeah.
Because going out on your own, there is this dream that gets painted, right? There is this dream that gets painted that having a, you know, be your own boss kind of vibe. Tell me what it's like, Beck, for you to be your own boss. And I want transparency here, if you can. I would love that, because I want to know not just that you do get to go to the beach and go for a wonderful cliff walk on a Wednesday afternoon in the beautiful sunshine.
This is rare, by the way. I hardly leave my house.
tell me about what it means in the trenches of you being your own boss. What does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, the drawbacks of it are that, you know, I've got a kid in kindy who feels like gets sick every 2 weeks. So when he's home with me, I'm generally still working and I have the door open there. And I say, my kid could pop in at any time because he's watching shows. And, you know, this is transparency. The other week he came in and said, right in the middle of a client call, Mum, going to do a wee. I'm like, great. Thanks for the information. Thanks for sharing that with me. You know, my husband's working in Sydney at the moment, so I'm solo parenting. So that means that, like, yesterday I got up, woke up, we had breakfast, dropped into kindy. I went straight into work at 9. I finished work at 4:15, then picked him up from kindy. So in that time I worked all day with clients and didn't have a break in between, picked him up. So there was no space for me yesterday. Then I had a client at 8 p.m. So by the time I put him to bed, I then had a client. So there was literally no space for me yesterday. So that's why I feel grateful to be able to get out and do that stuff today. So a lot of the time it looks like me working from my home office with clients, and I love the work that I do. So it never feels like a burden, but it's also a lot. And
what about the other stuff? And thank you for sharing with that transparency of that, because, you know, again, there's this picture that gets painted, and if anybody who's followed my work for long enough, I attempt And my intention across all of social media and all of my work is to be as transparent and authentic as possible. You know, I went for a swim this morning at the beach because I woke up, and when I posted about it, what I posted about was, this isn't what I do every morning. I'm generally unenthusiastic to get out of bed. This morning was the same case. So, you know, having full transparency, you love what you do. You love your client work. Being in business for yourself and having a life on your terms from this perspective isn't just your client work though, right? Like, what about all the other elements of you being in business? Talk to me about what that's like.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the stuff. I'm like happy that I'm at a point where I outsource stuff that I hate doing, like bookkeeping and social media. But there's definitely, like, you know, that I have to write notes, and I started my own podcast, so that involves a lot of work, and just admin-y stuff that comes with being in business, and that you are responsible for everything. You know, I take out my bins. Sometimes my cleaner does. But, you know, I take out my bins. I do the washing up here. I make myself a coffee. You know, it's it's every, you carry everything. You carry the whole load of everything. And it also, like, you're learning all the time, right? Like, I literally just started a new course for relationships. And I'm like, now I'm learning, you know, and that's on, it's like anyone's paying me to learn. That'd be great, you know. This is my time that I'm learning.
Yeah, and I think that what you've just spoken to there is that you're responsible for everything. So you get the freedom of being able to do what you want when you want and schedule your own time and do all that kind of stuff. You also, what comes with that freedom is responsibility.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else in your business that is making the ultimate decisions for you?
No. No.
So every single decision about whether or not you're investing to help, you know, to have with a bookkeeper or a cleaner or social media team, all of those decisions are on your shoulders, right?
Yeah, totally.
And then all the decisions about the clients that you have, the platforms that you work in, any offers that you have, including your household and your family, is all on your shoulders, right? What's that like?
What's it like? I don't know. I'm so used to it. I don't mind it. I don't mind responsibility. If it means that I get freedom, I'll take it any day, because I don't mind holding responsibility. I perhaps because in my career, like throughout my career, I've held responsibility for what felt like much bigger things, like way bigger organizations, way bigger personal situations for people. It doesn't feel hard. Yeah. Sometimes it can feel overwhelming. Absolutely. I mean, I'm grateful. Like when my husband's away this week, that means I do hold it all in the household. You know, otherwise I normally don't. But yeah.
Because I'm curious around decision fatigue. Have you heard of this term before?
Yes. Like being exhausted from making lots of decisions.
They say that, like, you know, the only examples I can come up with are Steve Jobs or Barack Obama. They wear the same thing every day, or the same suit every day. So because they have to make so many big, important decisions that they don't want to have to make the small decisions like, what am I going to wear, or, you know, like, what am I going to eat? If those decisions are taken care of, then it gives them more space to deal with the decisions within their big, hard, scary jobs. You have to make every single decisions all the time. I'm hearing you say that that's not so much of a stress or a burden on you. Is that right?
Yeah. I think maybe it used to be. Now I don't. So how I used to operate would that I'd jump into a million things and I'd just say yes, and perhaps not have great boundaries with what I should do or shouldn't do, or I don't know. But now I definitely sit with things a lot more before I make a decision, and it's not hard for me to make a decision now because it usually comes from my intuition around what I need to do next, or if something else is right. So maybe I'm just not making as many decisions because I'm more cautious with how I make them, or I don't know. Maybe something's changed. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a streamline, there's a rhythm to which you were in. If you could cast yourself back to when you were first starting the relationship circle, how did all those decisions feel at that point in time, if you recall? It could be the same.
Yeah. No, that was definitely a lot, because at that point, like, I was deciding on branding. Well, like, there was a lot of decisions around, like, where do I show up? How do I show up? What, who am I talking to? What am I saying? Like, what, like, what am I actually doing? What, yeah, there was a lot of decisions. And now I just, like, there's so much more knowledge around that.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm hearing is rhythm as well. There's a sense of, like, you found your feet in it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
How long do you reckon that took?
Ages. maybe, like, I reckon only in the last year I found my feet. So, like, someone asked me the other day, how long have you been in business? And I said, I think 4 or 5 years. It's terrible, but I don't know which one it is. But it, definitely in the last year I found my feet. But it took a while.
And how long did it take you to, and if you don't mind me asking, like, how long did it take you to feel secure within the dollars, even if you do now? Because I know that we can be in business for 20 years and still not feel like we're secure in getting the clients every year or whatever that happens to be.
Yeah.
One of the scariest parts for people to go into something that's have the confidence to live a life on their terms and be courageous enough is the financial kind of aspect.
Mm.
Did that happen quickly for you? Was it a long time?
No, it didn't happen quickly, but when I started, I was still working full time, and I made that decision because I didn't want to feel this, like, scarcity around money, because I knew that would then drive decisions that I didn't want to make, or I would be really salesy or desperate in wanting to get money. So I, yeah, was very conscious of that in the beginning. And if I'm completely honest, no, even now I don't have that. Like, yes, I have consistent income with some clients, but there's definitely some weeks where I'm like, what if I, like, even yesterday I was like, I'm signed up for this course. How on earth am I going to find the money to do this course that I've just signed up? I don't know. It'll happen. It's going to come. I have no idea. But still, there was a moment of like, oh my God, what have I done?
Contraction.
Yeah.
This moment of like, holy smoke, what have I just done to myself?
Yeah.
How do you deal with that uncertainty? Like, because I feel like, again, and I think there's pros and cons to living a life where you have work, and there'll be people on my podcast who aren't necessarily in business who I think are living life on their terms, because I don't necessarily think that just being in business is the thing that allows you to have life on your terms. There's plenty of people who are in business who are not free,
yeah,
and who do not have that sense of freedom within themselves.
Totally.
The uncertainty piece of living any kind of courageous life, you know, even the move.
Mm.
Well, you looked around a house on a video call, right? And yeah, you'd been down here, but, you know, like, presumably he had an interview with people that he'd never met before.
Mm-hmm.
So your husband, how have you dealt with that level of uncertainty in your life, and how do you deal with it now?
I think it's just getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think, and to be honest, I think we probably just learned. I learned that through network marketing, for one, and I definitely learned that through personal development and just doing things and just sitting and being uncomfortable. Like, and just knowing, I don't know, that nothing is forever. Like, sure, we move into this house and it's horrible, and it wasn't, but, you know, say it was, and we've, like, signed a lease. You can get out of that. Like, I had a client yesterday who's, like, so scared about getting married because she's feeling that she's going to be trapped, and like, but what if it doesn't equal that? Like, you can get divorced. You're not happy, you get divorced. Like, you're not happy, you sell your house. You're not happy, you, like, you can, like, what's that saying? You're not a tree. Like, you can move.
You can,
like,
move. Yeah.
So I don't know, I just think that, and like, even with this course, right, I was like, a moment of like, it was a tiny moment of like, oh my God, what have I done? But then it was also like, I know for me to make more money, I have to be pushed to the point where I go, I am going to invest in that. It's uncomfortable for me to invest in that, but I know in investing in that, I'm going to make more money, because it's what the pattern of my life has already done over and over and over again. So I know that by being pushed financially, me being pushed financially, I'm going to make more money.
Yeah. And I could not agree with you more on that. So something similar, you know, in enrolled in a program of, you know, that makes me go contract ever so slightly. How do you know when it's the interesting, even the way that I'm questioning this, how do you know that it's the right decision when you make it?
Yeah. I mean, you probably know what I'm going to say, but is there a right or wrong? Like, there's just an outcome, right?
Yeah.
So I just think you can do something differently. Like, even this course, right? I don't know. Maybe I could get my money back if I hated it, or like, it's going to teach me something. Everything has a lesson in it, regardless of whether it's like something that you want to happen or don't want to happen, or you think it's the right thing that should happen or the wrong thing, it still has a lesson in it for you where it's going to take you somewhere else. And I bet you everyone who's listening to this can look back at their life and go, oh, when that happened, this step happened. And when this happened, this step happened. And it seemed horrible at the time, but then this came out of it. Or maybe it didn't for you. I don't know. But that's what's happened in the pattern of my life, is that I can look back and go, oh, right, when I did, that's why this is linked now, which allows me to trust now where I am and what's going to happen going forward.
Oh, there's a level of perspective and wisdom in that, Beck. And I'm curious about that from the that's a perspective, like choice, right? From a personal development perspective, I can see that you are going, okay, cool. Well, there's going to be lessons no matter what.
Mm.
And it brings me back to the coaching principle. There is no failure, only feedback.
Mm.
That we're just getting information. Okay, so I invested in a charlatan that didn't turn out to be very good for me. We can sit there and go, I'm a pathetic loser, or they did me wrong, or I'm a victim. Or we can look at it and say, well, now I know what to look for. Uh-huh. I know the red flags of a charlatan.
Yep.
What makes you have that ability to look at it through the lens of information, of outcome, of the choice to maybe just make a different choice if it wasn't where you want to be?
Yeah. I think I used to view this as a really negative thing about myself, but I changed my mind a lot. And I used to think, oh, that's so flaky. They're the words I'd use on myself. It's so flaky. Can't make a decision. Everyone's going to think you just chop and change. And like now I think that that's a really powerful thing, because I just, with whatever, it's like my brain is like, or my heart or soul is like constantly getting information. Then it's going, okay, that's new information. Let's redirect. Let's, you know, go down a different path. Let's, you know, try something different. So I think just that idea of being like curious around what could happen, and it's not black and white. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
How do you know when to, you, people who are listening are going to sit there and go, like, at what point do you quote give up? You know, like, when are we banging our head against a wall, and when are we diving out too soon? Have you had any experience with that of like, oh, I just needed to move through that discomfort? You know, I think it can be that we're sitting there going, I'm trying this way, I'm determined, but we don't let in any other opportunities. How do you discern the difference between when do you give up and when do you keep going?
Yeah, like from my intuition and my gut. Like if I really got quiet, I know what it feels like. And like you used before, that like contractive energy, that like tightness, that like lack of air, that for me, that tightness in your chest, that for me feels like that's not the right way to head. When it feels like it's expansive and open and light, when something feels heavy for me, that's generally not the right way. It can feel really uncomfortable, but if there's like a heaviness about it, it's that doesn't feel it. So I don't know. I've just learned how it feels in my own body, and I don't know if that's how it feels in everyone else's body, but I think it's really important to know that even if you – okay, so say you had a decision you needed to make and you're like – you jump out. And after you jumped out of it, you're like, I've jumped out too soon. I should have pushed through the discomfort. At least you knew like how that felt in your body when you made that decision. So then you can relate that. So that was never even a mistake, because you've gathered information from that decision. So I think it's just about getting to know how stuff feels for you.
Yeah, you have to – very often you have to get it wrong to know what it feels like to be right.
Uh-huh.
You can't know. You know, if you have a look at learning how to ride a bike, for example, if you keep the training wheels on the whole time, you don't know what it's like to correct yourself.
Yeah.
It's good to have that in the beginning, but with a bike, you'll know what it feels like if your balance is too far on the left, too far on the right. Then you'll be able to find what your center is. It means that you're probably likely to stack on your bike a few times before you figure it out, but that's how you learn. That is the process of that. That gut reaction that you're talking about, that gut instinct, people often confuse that with their fear reaction. How do you know it's different for you?
For me, it is in my body. It's literally in my gut or my womb. And when it's fear, it's in my head. Fear is like a very quick sounding voice. It's like a speed about fear or anxiety. And my gut is very calm, very grounded, very usually very quiet. The anxiety is like, look over here. Hello, look at me. Make, you know, quickly make the decision. Otherwise you're going to. And I just know, I think I've made a lot of decisions out of fear. And so I know what that feels like now. And that's why I take longer to make decisions, because I made many decisions and jumped into many programs out of fear that they were. And look, they're good selling tactics too, that's because scary. There's a lot of fear around that, around if you don't get in now, you're not going to. I'm like, well, I don't want to miss out. So I would jump into a lot of things, and I could, I was known, if you got me on a discovery call, I was buying your shit no matter what. Yes. So like I used to just not get on any calls because I couldn't say no. So I just, out of doing it over and over and over again, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a really beautiful distinction. It's in your head and it's quick and it's frantic, the fear. Mm. Whereas your gut, even if it is a no, is quiet and calm, and there's a centeredness that come with that.
Yes.
I cannot recommend people enough to test and measure.
Yeah.
Go ahead and make, you know, if you can, as many unimportant mistakes as possible, like order the wrong thing at dinner.
Yeah.
And see what that feels like to order the wrong thing, because to live a life on your terms means that you're going to have to do, you're going to have to be courageous, and you're going to have to trust you.
Mm.
Because this is the path unwalked, you know? We are pioneers. You are walking a path. Beck, you have carved a path for yourself. Nobody created this job for you.
Mm,
No one's telling you what to do day to day, so you need to be the one that then trusts you.
It's so true.
But tell me, what's the scariest thing for you about living life by design? What's the scariest or hardest thing about this kind of life?
Probably that I am responsible, even though before I said that didn't scare me. That's the first thing that came to me. There you go. I've changed my mind.
There you go.
Told you how quickly I changed my mind.
Okay, cool. That's the hardest. That's the scariest part. What about the coolest part? What is the coolest part of living a life by design?
That there is endless possibilities. And like even today, I know I said this to you the other week, is that I don't know when we saw each other, but that I was so in my business towards the end of last year that I had no capacity or no space to dream anymore. And so I've had that in the last couple of weeks. And I when I dream really big. So like that excites the hell out of me, that I can make a huge impact and change a lot of lives and make a big impact. It just like, I think it's just the endless possibilities very much excites me, because I'm such a big thinker. I'm not detail oriented, which is why I have to hire people to help with the small things. Yep. But that, the endless possibilities.
I'm hearing so much about your self-awareness here.
Mm.
I think this is really, really key. It really shows your level of personal development, because you have the awareness enough to go, I love dreaming and the detail get me bogged down. And when you know that about yourself, you can go, sweet, I can outsource the stuff that I'm not great at to people that I trust, because I'm trusting my instinct, which frees up the space for you to dream.
Mm.
Yeah. If you could, as we come to the end of today's conversation, which has been so beautiful, insightful, thank you for coming on and hanging out with me today.
It's been so fun.
Really excellent. If you were talking to somebody who is maybe feeling quite trapped in their life, someone who feels as though they're not, you know, they're on the precipice. They want to go live a life. Maybe they want to buy a van and go around Australia and they're trying to be a digital nomad, or they're wanting to take up ballet because they've always just, you know, they're living a small life scrolling instead of going and doing their hobbies that they want to do. What advice would you give to someone to give them the courage to go live a life that's on their terms?
Yeah, my first thought was just do it, but that's not that helpful, because you would have just done it otherwise. But I think a huge thing that came to me when we were talking about intuition and fear is that you won't be able to hear your intuition if there's too much fear there, because it's so noisy. So, you know, get quiet and just sit with yourself. Like when I say to clients, like, I literally want you to do nothing and sit on the ground and don't look at your phone, don't read, don't take in any new, you have the information. Like stop looking for the information. We don't need to, like, I know right behind me is like 1,000 books that I haven't read, but I don't need to look for the information outside of myself. You have the information inside of yourself. So even if you just feel into, what would it feel like if I didn't do ballet? Like, how would I feel inside myself if I knew that I could go do it because there's a class down the road or an hour away? What would that feel like for me if I didn't do it? And, you know, what would it feel like if I did? What would it feel like if I did just jump and do it? I just get, spend time by yourself, get quiet, and yes, probably should go listen to my own advice.
Well, you do all the time. I know that you do. And if I can build upon that to close, I feel like that just do it. There is such power in that. You're always going to be afraid.
Mm.
I want people to understand this deep down, that when you've got someone who's living their life on their terms, it doesn't mean that we do not have fear. You spoke about this of like, you know, joining the new program, like, oh, okay, can I? Like, how am I going to make that work? In my coaching world, they would say yes and figure out how.
Yeah.
And don't do it recklessly. You know, don't put yourself in a position, as far as I'm concerned, where, and I'm happy to be, you know, challenged on this, don't put yourself in a position where you're absolutely starving, like totally, quite literally, if you can't afford to put food on the table. Although a lot of people have done, if you see The Pursuit of Happiness, putting your last dollars on the line makes some people move into a space where they have to make it happen.
Totally.
I know for myself, I'm more moderate. So are you.
Mm.
That just scares the hell out of me and I move into inaction. But being uncomfortable is part of the deal.
Mm.
Being able to recognize like the whole feel the fear and do it anyway.
Mm.
You're going to be scared when you challenge yourself. When you move into different spaces, it's going to feel, oh my God, your mind's going to say, I shouldn't be doing this. But at the end of the day, if you don't, your world's only going to get smaller.
Mm.
Mm. Thank you for being here. Tell me, how do people find you? Where can we connect with you if we want to, you know, identify the good stuff and shake up old habits and create the kind of bonds that laugh in the face of life's curveballs, which is what you do. If we want to embrace honesty, openness, and have unwavering support with you, and to have you be our guide that is unshakable and have a relationship that fills us with joy, how do we do that? How do we find you?
Yeah, I'm all over the internet, I hope. My business is The Relationship Circle. I think I'm most active on Instagram, although I have a beautiful new website. So that's therelationshipcircle.com. And yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, so all the links are going to be in the bio. Everything, like the show notes, will be all there. If you want to contact Bec, please feel welcome to go do so. She is an absolute powerhouse and it's been such a pleasure to have you here on the show with me today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me just a little closing thought here. 5 words.
Oh, God.
To close today's conversation. They could be in sequence. It could be a sentence, but they could be 5 separate words. What are 5 separate words that you want to leave in this container, putting you on the spot here, to close today's conversation?
I'm just counting them on my hand, everyone.
Good, yes.
Okay, I'm going to repeat 2 words. Ready? Trust your intuition always, always.
I love it. I love it. It's beautiful. Thanks for being here, Bec.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast. I hope you feel more confident, more self-assured, and ready to go tackle the world's problems and maybe kick ass in some of your dreams. If you haven't already, I would love for you to like and subscribe, follow, and maybe leave a review so that other people know how to find this awesome podcast too. If you're wanting to sink your teeth into something even more juicy, my number one best-selling book, Perfectly Imperfect, Your Complete Guide to Loving Yourself and Loving Your Body, is now available on all good bookstore sites, both in print, digital, and I narrated it for Audible as well. If you think the coaching or maybe one of my courses is for you, why not head to www.moreconfidence.com.au and get in touch and see if we can talk. And of course, you can find me all across the social medias. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, which is where you're probably listening now, or maybe even here on the podcast platform. Sending you big love and wishing you a beautiful day.